Send a maniac to catch one. Hey, gang, what's going on? Kevin Goatee's here, so you know it's time for another rip-roaring episode of Gutting the Sacred Cow. This week, Matt Welch joins us to discuss why he thinks Field of Dreams is nostalgic nonsense. You know I love alliteration. Sitting in the co-host chair, you may remember him from The Natural. That's right, Nick Whitmer joins me to discuss, hey, is Matt crazy or, you know, just in Iowa. GuttingTheSacredCow.com for your all your t-shirts, hats, mugs that have our faces on it. Patreon.com/GuttingTheSacredCow podcast. And of course, thank you for telling your friends and how awesome this podcast is and writing those five-star ratings, 2 or 3 sentence reviews on your podcast platform of choice, because it does help this algorithm, which is a fickle one. And there you go. No more delays. Here we go. Field of Dreams with Matt Welch.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kind of like it, yeah.
I said, Ming, what are you doing here? I told you to go fuck your mother. Nick Whitmer, name that film.
Ooh, it sounds vaguely 80s. Right. Something people naming, man, Ming, huh? Fuck your mother. Rated R for sure, because the language. Is it an 80s movie?
Nope.
Can you give me that? It's not. Fuck.
It's not an 80s movie.
Something About Mary?
No, sir. Our guest today is Matt Welch. Matt, super fan of the California, nay, Anaheim Angels. Matt, do you know what film that is from?
No, I don't. And they're called the Los Angeles Angels again. Come on now.
I was waiting for that. I set that up for you. And you.
I know.
The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. No, sirs. The answer is you're going to hate yourselves for not knowing this one. Goodfellas.
Oh, see, it's too obvious.
Sometimes I didn't. Yeah, same.
I mean, the Ming part, I could see why I would throw you, but Ming, go fuck your mother. I can kind of even say it like that. Kevin Goatee, guest host Nick Whitmer, who the fans adored after he took the tits right off of The Natural, is going to sit in the co-host chair tonight.
But good. Matt Welch, the people are on my side.
Yeah, but Matt, except for Bill Schultz, who hated you for trying to take down The Natural. Yep. And sticking along those same baseball love films, Matt hates Field of Dreams. Yes. 1989, a budget of $15 million, a box office gross of $84.4 million. Turn that into 2022 money. $34.7 million budget, $195.2 million. IMDb, as we all know, is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. Matt, what do you think that Field of Dreams scored on IMDb? Pausing for a sip of my gin.
9.1.
Ballsy guess. Nick Whitmer.
I wouldn't say that. This is a movie that just recently, I think the last 5 years, people just started hating it. I would guess 7.6.
One of you has won both showcases. And that person's going to have their ass grabbed by Bob Barker is Nick Whitmer.
Yes.
7.5.
Damn.
Oh, wow. That's one off.
Rotten Tomatoes is a 1 through 100 score. Nick, what did the critics score Field of Dreams?
The critics. I think the critics probably like this. I'd say 82.
Matt?
I was going 83. I've been humbled, chastened from the first go-round, but I'd say 83.
You're going to $1 him? Well, that $1 works. 88 by the critics.
Ah, nice. Well done.
Thank you. And now, Matt, back to you for the audience Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh, dear God. Now we're talking 90s. I will say 94.
Nick?
I would say 75. If I go with
86.
86.
I win.
I do. You do. You do.
Yeah.
Quotes. Is this heaven? No, it's Iowa.
It's Iowa.
Did that twice, just in case you didn't get it the first time.
Yep.
If he's such a good friend, he would have given you his address. Do we need it in this one? This one I forgot about, but man, this is great. Do we need a catcher? Not if you get it close to the plate.
Yeah.
Just once, I went to look a pitcher back before he throws a pitch and wink at him. Matt, what about you?
Moonlight.
You know it. Quotes, Matt. Anything jump out at you quote-wise?
Besides every single possible time them saying, well, you know, we went to Berkeley, but we majored in the 60s.
Yes.
They had to let you know that the 60s was a thing. James Earl Jones sees Kevin Costner. Are you from the 60s? And sort of takes bug spray at him, which is actually one of the best moments of the film, if we're being honest. But the 60s in all caps is just
that what
quote.
That was? That was bug spray?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what is that thing? Yeah. I was like, I don't even know what that is.
He lives
is
in
that,
Boston.
Is that one of those fireplace things?
Bug spray. No, not bellows. Aren't those called bellows with the air thing that you pump?
Right.
Yeah. No, that was bug spray. That or holy smoke they use in Catholic churches. Either or, both are disgusting to breathe in. Number,
I love, for quotes, I love the Amy Madigan at the PTA meeting when she calls her Ava Braun and says, no, you had two 50s and a 70s. That was great. That was great.
The Nazi cow. The best quote is one of the worst, which is, hey, Pop, do you want to have a catch? Have a catch. I noticed, Nick, that you're wearing a baseball hat. How many times you, as a baseball fan and as someone who has put a glove on your hand and thrown a ball to another human being, let's go have a catch.
Yeah, I think the verb usually used when I was a kid was you'd go play catch.
You play catch. That's what we do in America. We don't have a catch. It's not a passive thing that goes on.
It just felt antiquated and the whole movie's antiquated, but I don't know. I don't know if that's right. I don't know if anybody's ever said that or if that's a screenwriter who just doesn't know shit. I have no idea.
You never. Two English lit majors can tongue kiss it out later. Hold on a second.
I majored in the 60s, bro. Come on.
Yeah.
Majored in the 60s. We're hippies. We get it. Okay.
Far out, man.
Yeah. Peace, love, dope. All right. Any other quotes from you boys? Anything else jump out at you? Matt, Nick, anything else?
It's more the enunciation because you hear it at every goddamn baseball game. And you have for 30 years is James Earl Jones is fantastic, a voice. But the way that he pronounces baseball.
Nice. Baseball.
Again, no human being except for him in this speech in this movie has ever pronounced the word baseball as baseball in that way to give it this kind of over the top gravitas. But it's 60. It's a great line reading. So right. More powerful.
He does play an eccentric writer. So I'll give him that. I love the Terrence Mann scene when Kevin Costner first gets there. There's so many, like, just anything Terrence Mann said in that scene. And then Kevin Costner's like, I'm not going to show you my gun. Great quote.
Yeah.
As if that's like a big deal, like showing them the gun. Yeah. Funny.
Five.
The whole opening monologue too. Yeah. Great quotes in the opening monologue. Anyway, sorry.
Five fun facts.
Five fun facts, 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 five fun facts.
Oh boy.
Who was the original choice to play Ray Kinsella? I'll give a hint. He is huge in the 80s, huge in the 90s, huge pretty much still now.
Hmm.
Huh. I do know Kurt Russell was He was a baseball player too, and he was up for like Bull Durham and a lot of these movies, but I don't recall him actually being up for this one, but that's a guess. Maybe Harrison Ford or I don't know.
The only actor who's been huge that entire time is Tom Cruise.
Oh, Tom Hanks.
One of you just said it, and it's Nick Whitmer. Tom Hanks was considered for the role.
Yeah.
Can you imagine though, Harrison Ford? No, it's Iowa.
I couldn't imagine Tom Hanks hitting fly balls out to left fields. Like, there's no way. No.
In fairness, Tom Hanks did get the role 5 years later in Forrest Gump. So
he was a manager in Field of Dreams. He was Jimmy Dugan. Avoid the clap, Jimmy Dugan, for Christ's sakes. Does that not
one
count?
Of his worst performance as an actor. I'm a huge Tom Hanks fan, but that is some scenery chewing, like, whoa, performance, I thought.
I love him in that role. I love him in that role. I was in the John reading my contract, ladies, and he just cracks me up. Five fun facts. So that was number one. Number two, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were extras in the Fenway Pack scene. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Pack.
Good guess, though.
One sniper rifle, two bullets. I'm not gonna let you try and guess. This guy's got a it's too hard. Jimmy Stewart passed in the role for Burt Lancaster at first, and then Lancaster also passed at first and said he didn't get it, but a friend convinced him to do the role. And now his last role, his last movie,
dude had to croak pretty soon.
It was. He died a few months after this was over. Right. And this one will just rankle Bill Schultz's, right to the cockles. Ray Liotta could not hit well enough left-handed as Shoeless Joe Jackson. He had to stay with his dominant right-hand side. Ray Liotta, said this is his biggest regret in all of his acting roles, not learning how to bat left-handed for this film.
You know what's weird is he could throw left-handed. That always was I'm a big critic of actors doing anything athletic. That was part of my criticism of The Natural. I think they're like Michael Madsen is like the worst athlete ever to be like just terrible. And rewatching this, I was impressed with his swing. One, I know it was from the wrong side of the plate historically, but he threw left-handed and it actually looked like pretty good. I was like, if he can throw left-handed, why can't he bat left-handed?
Ricky Henderson was one of those guys who caught with the opposite hand.
Yeah, I guess so.
Jason Giambi played, Tino Martinez, as a Yankee fan, played first base differently than others.
I just like the idea that we're going to take a illiterate Southern boy who is strapping 6'1", 200 pounds back when that was big, and was left-handed, and we're going to cast him with the pineapple face guy from Goodfellas. That's just fantastic.
I like to say Ray Liotta fell asleep in a bed of nails face down. Or had a had a track meet on his face.
Or he went bobbing for French fries.
Chantics.
Moonlight Graham was a real person and was the town doctor of Chisholm, Minnesota. They just pulled the name out of a phone book and Yahtzee. That fun fact wasn't so fun for you fellas, so
The one that you said before we recorded, give that one. That blew all of our minds,
right?
I'm surprised. I guess it wasn't. I don't know it either. Abby Hoffman, the girl who played Kinsella's daughter. Whose daughter Karen. Is that? Karen, excuse me. Karen Kinsella, Ray Kinsella's daughter, is none other than... what's his fucking name? Or who blanked on him? Fuck.
Andy Warhol's
daughter. Yes, Warhol. The same. Is that like baseball?
Yeah, that's the David Bowie pronunciation. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, right. So that was the sixth fun fact. I thought, well, there you go. And now it's time for our audience to get in on the fun for Ask a Gutter.
Ask a Gutter. You gotta ask a gutter.
At Taco Shirt Krillin, speaking of terrible baseball movies, which is better, Rookie of the Year or Angels in the Outfield?
Ooh. I can say without a doubt, from my point of view, that the answer has to be Rookie of the Year. I thought Rookie of the Year was The Rookie, right?
Rookie of the Year was the one where his
pitcher's got a big butt.
Oh, God, no. I helpfully didn't see either one of those, but The Rookie was okay.
The Rookie was great.
Excellent. I having seen both of those, you know what bothered me about Angels in the Outfield is that they literally it was God and the Angels were interfering with baseball. And they're like, hey, listen, it's the championship. We have to sit this one out. We're not allowed to decide championships. I'm like, so you're allowed to take a team and take them all the way to the championship and just do all this bizarre bullshit and literally cheat your ass off. And then you get to the finals and you're like, yeah, we can't do it now. Fuck you, dude. What kind of morality does God have? There was another deserving team that could have won a World Series that year that didn't get in because they were literally playing against God. And then when the championship comes around, they're like, I'm sitting this one out. Stupid.
Give it to
the Rookie of the Year.
That's like Barry Bonds stopping steroids in the middle of his home run chase and then not taking steroids for the World Series run.
Yeah, exactly. It stops him in the playoffs. He's like, listen, I got to be fair. Okay, like regular season, I'll juice, but not in the playoffs. Yeah. I have a code here.
I've never seen Angels in the outfield because I don't give a shit. Rookie of the Year was terrible. Here's one that does not go on many people's radars, and shame on you, because I think it's amazing. It's Little Big League. Little Big League is goddamn great.
Haven't seen
Don't know it. Describe it in 10 words or less.
A kid inherits the Minnesota Twins from his grandfather and manages them.
Nice description.
All right.
And 10 words or so. Yeah, all right. Not bad. Next question is from at Bango 2331. The whole Worlds Collide thing aside, we the fifth in the GTSC mashup. What? What the fuck is wrong with you, Matt Welch? And why do you hate everything beautiful in this world?
There's this kind of softy element of our Midwestern friends, Schultz among them. Yes. They get all kind of weak-kneed and teary-eyed at this treacle, especially if it has anything to do with like Illinois or Iowa or this kind of stuff. Dude, I'm seeing the world as it comes up to me, and I don't mean to tell you how you should feel about a movie, but I am going to point out a couple of reasons why how you feel about the movie is totally fucking wrong.
Somewhere, somehow, Bill Schultz, wearing his Wilson Alvarez jersey, just snapped a pencil in anger.
By which you mean his leg.
Oh, the jokes just keep on coming. At Zyphos, question for the Field of Dreams gutter. What do you think is the biggest driving force of the issue? Daddy issues or nostalgia for a time there wasn't any daddy issues?
Oh, I mean, I don't want to steal the eventual argument a bit. I think it's like generational daddy issues. It's the kind of narcissistic but good-hearted feeling among the 60s people that, hey, maybe they kind of self-alienated from their parents too much and were a little bit too hard on them, and they want to kind of get back, but they want to do it in such a way, like all baby boomers always do, that preserves their kind of narcissistic glory and like preserves their argument that they were right all along, even though what Kevin Costner is right about besides shampoo choice in this movie is very difficult to discern.
I'll assume he's a pert man by your finely trained eye.
Yeah, no, I think he was actually getting into the Nexus stuff. I think he was going pro.
What a stud.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Next question at something something cast, STST cast, the guys who do our artwork. Matt, pitch your Field of Dreams / Children of the Corn horror movie mashup.
They had moments they could have done that. Like, yeah. Right? Like at the beginning, it's a bit creepy. Corn is just creepy by nature, as we all know. I feel like it's a road not taken in this movie to kind of like have, first of all, Kevin Costner legit worried that he's losing his brain. He doesn't seem to be too haunted by this as a possibility when it seems really the likeliest explanation for a good portion there. And like he gets the Shoeless Joe to show up a little bit early in this thing, if we're being honest.
That goes back to that baby boomer delusion.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. If you build it, he will come, and they build and then all of a sudden a ghoul comes out of the
fire
and starts killing his family. He's like, who says you meant that?
Who says the person's going to be any good?
Yeah.
Chick Gandil wasn't exactly the kind of person you want to see again.
Or it could have been Ty Cobb, and he could have murdered everybody then too.
Or you could have had Slimer from Ghostbusters or Michael Myers pop out. You never know what Pandora's box comes out of that cornfield. I think I agree with you there, Matt. Next question. At Nemirovsky for Field of Dreams, would the Shyamalan twist, are we going to make M. Night Shyamalan an adjective?
Yes.
Twist of Costner's character actually being a schizophrenic who abducted James Earl Jones's character, dragged him to Iowa, and buried him in the cornfield hurt or improve the movie?
I mean, the question answers itself, people. Man. Holy cow. Now we're talking. Like, James Earl Jones pretending to go along. Oh, sure, I'll go see Moonlight Graham in Chisholm, Minnesota. And like going, and then the first chance that he gets, like he just runs, fleeing, screaming. So many great possibilities there that untaken.
I think we'd have to do it like in a Fight Club manner where like you watch it and then they show you all the scenes you saw before from the actual perspective. And it's like James Earl Jones terrified in a room, you know, like he wouldn't have willingly gone along, and then he ended up dead in the field.
And then like the seven-year-old's point of view, like my daddy is gone crazy. So crazy that he's, by the way, traveling around the country on his own dime, calling home and not even talking to his 7-year-old. I got a 7-year-old daughter. I'd get her on the phone. I'd say, hey, honey, you know, maybe as part of the phone call while the bankers are at the kitchen table, including the wife's brother, saying that you got to foreclose because your husband's gone crazy. So, yeah, horror story from the perspective of a 7-year-old who almost gets murdered at the end of the movie after.
Wouldn't that make Timothy Busfield actually the hero of the movie?
I mean, that's the argument. You can't have a ginger as a hero. So that
kind of- ain't that the truth.
Hey, haven't you seen Band of Brothers? Come on.
Look, he had his moments in Revenge of the Nerds playing the violin and then blowing his load prematurely on the couch when the nerds had a party. But now enough's enough. Oh yeah. He was also the first baseman in Little Big League. I forgot. Holy shit. That's a fact. He was first baseman. Yeah, right. Everything's all Kevin Bacon-y and shit. Now, how funny would that have been if James Earl Jones does escape, Kevin Costner chases him down, buries him in the cornfield, pats the dirt down, and go, "No, I am your father," and then just drops the shovel and walks away.
Yes, this is what we need.
It would make perfect sense because he read all of his books and he like killed him. You know, like a deranged fam, like, you know, like
Misery.
The guy who killed Lennon, but yeah, Misery. That's a perfect example.
At RGSR Watch on Field of Dreams, what a waste of time. There is no need to comment. It was great entertainment, simple as that. Well, if there's no need to comment, why did you?
Good point.
I hate to get all meta with you fellas so early in the evening, but shit, here we are. All right, Nick Whitmer, let's let Matt come out and do something silly, like having Reggie Jackson in an Angels uniform try and come out and kill the Queen in Naked Gun silly. And let's, Nick, welcome Matt to Gut the Sacred Cow! Wow. You got it after that first episode. Matt, Your Honor.
That's a fantastic setup, and thank you very much for it. No, look, I get it, including the last emailer or tweeter or whatever the hell. People who enjoy the movie will tell you that, yeah, sure, it's nostalgic and it's corny. That's part of its charm. But what I'm here to tell you is that not all nostalgia is made equal. The nostalgia in this movie is particularly insidious, and it's incredibly brazenly, openly cynical. It is saying, I am nostalgia-ing all over your face and taking your money. And that's actually the moral of the movie. And then meanwhile, it's sort of aggrandizing all the worst things about baby boomers as we go along. So nostalgia? What is the function of nostalgia besides like telling us a nice story about our childhood? Generally speaking, it's to vault backwards over some unpleasant recent past that you kind of want to stop talking about, right? In this particular case, as we mentioned before, what you get hit over and over and over on your head is that's the 60s. We come from the 60s. We majored in the 60s. So we want to go backwards, kind of over the unpleasant breaking, the fissures of the 60s, right? He reads the 60s guy who actually, you know, he invented Make Love Not War, the novelist does, James Earl Jones. And that's what led to the breaking he had with his father, which is the root kind of wound in this thing that needs to be healed. So if we vault back over the 60s, we can get to a more simple time. In the words of James Earl Jones in one of his two big sort of scenery chewing speeches, this field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and that could be again, right? So this is not just like your childhood was nice and I get it. It's like it was better before. Here's the thing with nostalgia, generally speaking, and definitely with almost every single major sport that you can think of, it wasn't better before for lots of reasons. What is in the 60s that we're vaulting over? Yeah, sure, it's the Vietnam War. We see a little montage at the beginning. You know, they maybe smoke pot a little bit and that kind of stuff. But what was in the 60s that was so contentious? Dude, it was race. it was race. The Black Panthers were in Berkeley when this dude was majoring in the 60s, which, by the way, was in the 70s because he was born in 1952. All right. So like that's what was happening and going down in Berkeley at the time, and the women's liberation movement and stuff like that. But it's race, race, race. Right. There's, you know, Muhammad Ali is getting his titles stripped from him. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is changing his name. They're having all the, you know, the Mexico City Olympics. People are doing like it's really uncomfortable. Civil Rights Act. Martin Luther King gets assassinated. All the cities go up in flames, and baseball games, among other places, are canceled all over the country. So it's all this unpleasantness. And so we've all backwards, and we get these, you know, bucolic people emanating from the cornfields. Who are these people? Well, first of all, they're all white. The sort of framing of build it and he will come. We're made to think at the beginning of the movie that the he, understandably so, is shoeless Joe Jackson, right? A guy, one of the greatest hitters in the early days of baseball, who was banned permanently for life because he was part of the Black Sox scandal of gambling on the World Series, trying to fix the World Series of 1919. There's a little bit of kind of an open historical question that maybe Shoeless Joe was too ignorant to really understand what he was doing. He was hoodwinked by the first baseman, who again is in there, Chick Gandel, who's an awful human being in every way, who like strong armed a lot of people. Joe Jackson, I think, got like 10 or 12 hits in that World Series, which is a record that stood for 40 years. So he didn't play badly in the World Series. But the idea is if you do this thing, then these guys who've been in this sort of limbo, and unable just to play this boyhood game back when things were once really nice and wonderful, are going to come back out and it's going to be great again. And here they are playing this humble, beautiful little game. Well, let's think to ourselves, like, who are the people who might be out there in limbo thinking, you know, I didn't really get my chance? It's not just your Moonlight Graham, who, you know, became a doctor afterwards or had a life circumstance. It's, I don't know, all the Negro Leagues players who couldn't fucking play in the game because they were barred because of racism. And I'm not the guy, really not the guy, who like leads with racism in all these things, but it's part of the history of America and baseball that is so huge. And the thing that sticks in my craw, I'd never noticed this the first time. I noticed this 2 days ago when I watched this, right? More players come out. And again, this is the Chicago Black Sox. Some of them are guilty. They're guilty of throwing baseball. It wasn't like a time when all things were all right and good. It was a time when they got paid like crap and they gambled and cheated on the World Series and got banned from life. But one of the players who comes in just to play because he's been missing the game is Mel Ott. Okay. Don't have to be a super big baseball nerd to know who Mel Ott is. Dude played for 22 seasons. He wasn't like sitting on the sidelines like, gosh, I can't play. He played from 1926 to 1947. He managed a half a dozen years. He went in the Hall of Fame. He played forever. He played when he was 17 years old. When he retired, 500
home runs. Yeah,
there were two black players in the major leagues when he retired. It was Jackie Robinson and Larry Doby. That's it. So, like the idea that doing all these sort of chasing these voices in your head and doing what they say is going to lead to people finally being able to play. We're just going to vault over the issue, race, which is huge in the 60s, and then also baseball's particular issue, which is that it was super racist against all of these people. The writer and director has said that this is his biggest regret, so I give him credit for identifying that. But this is the problem with the nostalgia machine and the way that we get there later on in the movie, of how it gets used cynically, in my view, is think about how the movie ends, right? It's a trail of cars. It's a trail of cars coming from all around. Starts with, you know, Kevin Costner playing catch with his dad. And to be clear, he's not playing catch. So the schism happens because his dad was old. He was 50 or something when he was born. And then he felt like his dad sold out and didn't chase his baseball dreams. And so he's got to have this rapprochement with his dad. His dad shows up at the end, spoiler alert. And he goes to have a catch, whatever the hell that means. And it's not his dad as a 50-year-old man. It's his dad as a young dude who, by the way, throws like a girl. He does not throw like a baseball player. But that's, set that aside. Like, you would think that if it's an actual, like, I forgive my dad, will he please forgive me? You play catch with the MF-er who absolutely sacrificed for you, and you appreciate that instead of like looking down on him through your 60s mindset. But no, he's playing catch with his younger self of a dad. But so there's it starts with them doing that, and then the shot goes out, and it's a line of cars who've gone up, And we have just heard the long speech, James Earl Jones saying people will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around. You'll say it's only $20 per person. We are going to sell you bullshit nostalgia, warmed over BS nostalgia that posits the sort of origin, beautiful pastoral history of baseball as being about cornfields when the game was basically invented in Brooklyn and Philadelphia. It's a city game that had some country boys who played. And we're going to repackage it to you, knowing that you're going to pay the money and say, thank you for making me feel good about having a catch with my dad and forgiving me for whatever bad things that I've done in my past. No, you are eating nostalgia for a time that didn't exist. And when it did exist, it was pretty bad for a bunch of people who we really should have wanted to emanate and come out of the cornfields instead of a bunch of goddamn crooks.
Oh, that was a salvo of a fireworks display. And then pow, guess what? Curtains.
Yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And is that all?
I mean, Kevin Costner, have you seen a more convincing farmer? The guy's dressed like Seinfeld, Jerry Seinfeld, you know, like the shirt is tucked into the jeans that it don't have a single dirt smudge. He's out there very unconvincingly.
That's a great point. That is a great point. I missed that. Not a speck of dust anywhere. No sweat stains. No dirty ass hat to wear. You know, keep your, you know, covered from the sun. It's just that luxurious line mane of hair that disappeared in the bodyguard and therefore every ass afterward.
And he's beautiful and it's beautiful and the settings are beautiful. And, I don't, you know, want to play I know about farming card because I don't, but 2 acres does not a farm, you know, financial future hinge on. He plowed a little field in a gigantic amount of cornfield. That's not going to be the thing that makes it done. And his long suffering hippie wife, who's very cheerful. Think about this moment. It's a very weirdly underplayed. We were talking earlier about how he doesn't wrestle too much with the visions that he is seeing. Doesn't necessarily have any kind of religious background, probably is kind of anti-religious, and suddenly he's hearing voices and visions and he's cool with it. So what happens when Shoeless Joe Jackson / Ray Liotta shows up, right? Like, it's kind of a big deal. Dead guy shows up as he looked like in life of many decades before. His wife sees it. What does she say in this moment? I'll go make some coffee. You might talk about it a little bit, like, hey, maybe the time space continuum just got kind of freaky. Maybe our thoughts about life and death are totally different than before. I mean, there's a reason why, like, you know, the Pope and a bunch of other people have over the years have gotten together to like figure out what happens when the aliens come, because people are going to be pretty freaked out. Well, what happens when the 1919 White Sox show up through the cornfield? That's kind of going to be heavy. So like maybe dwell on it for, no, it's just like, oh, that's nice. You know, I'll help you with your bleachers there. He's not a convincing farmer. He doesn't ever. Why is he farming in Iowa? He's like 36 years old, kind of aimless, obviously doesn't really want to be there. Wants to think that he's chasing a dream and keeping it real somehow. But in what possible sense, skipping out on his family, not really doing anything. So it's Kevin Costner and it's baseball and it's a nice setting. So you forgive him for all of it. But if you think for a half a second about his journey here and what the hell he's doing, and it's not ever forgiving people on their own terms or even respecting what they did on their own terms. It's like, hey, why didn't you live this life that we wanted to have as hippies in the 60s and then somehow being redeemed in this kind of a-hole-ish and very narcissistic sentiment.
Wow. All right. Anything else? I gotta make sure you have as much time as you want to.
Okay. Now we're good.
Okay. Give me a number 1 to 10 on your thoughts on Field of Dreams.
So 3.
Ooh, and, that's a lot of hatred.
Listen, I was once in a bar in unfortunate circumstances 29, 30 years ago. In a foreign country, and I was with a longtime friend, childhood friend, and we were trying to figure out the question of when did it all go wrong. You know, it's fair enough. You have to have a discussion, reason to talk, and we thought about it for a long time, and we decided it was a Field of Dreams.
wait. We're like the American like culture and domination went wrong. It was Field of Dreams.
It. No, I mean, think about baseball being repackaged basically ever since then. What was the first baseball stadium that was built after that? Well, it was Camden Yards. Hey, we're putting, hey, I love Camden Yards. It's
a beautiful park. I've been there several times.
Absolutely love Camden Yards. Don't get me wrong, but it became, and you have this, you know, the James Earl Jones speech piped in at every baseball game, this nostalgia, which is this gauzy look at the past that was never as good as you can imagine it to be. It was, is posited as the thing that makes baseball great. I argue that the thing that makes baseball just as great is Bo Bilinski just being drunk out of his face, throwing no hitters, dating maybe Van Doren, doing unspeakable things with guns and supermodels. It's the rogues. It's the people who aren't, you know, special gifted children of the corn. But it's the messy history of baseball. That's more nice or more interesting because it's real and you can sink your teeth into it. It's also, you know, in the last 30 years, baseball has gotten so much better because we have great Japanese players. Shohei Ohtani for my team, pretty good guy to have around, right? You have this influx from the Caribbean, which has been fantastic. It's made the game more interesting. Almost everybody that you can think of who's like, I really like to watch this person. There's a couple of exceptions. They tend to be immigrants. They're bringing new flavors into the game that haven't been there before. And this has nothing to do with children of the corn nostalgia, and yet this has been the dominant kind of flavor of baseball. And in the name of doing that, I love Camden Yards again, as I said, and I like a lot of the parks that have been built. Almost all of those parks have been built with these visions of bringing back a pastoral America at fantastic taxpayer expense, to an appalling degree, kind of selling this vision that everyone in their heart knows is BS, that they're like eating their own packaged nostalgic BS. So it is a root of that. And like people looking, especially at the end of that movie, which is rubbing your nose in it. It's like, this thing that you just did, we took your money. You're one of the people in the cars lining up. High five. Congratulations. Thanks for making us rich. We're movie stars and producers. You fell for it. And not only that, you're going to like make sure your kids fall for it too. I prefer the Bad News Bears vision of baseball, which is its actual ugly, glorious self, warts and all. So yeah, it's part of this packaging of America and America's pastime and all this kind of stuff that it's so much less interesting and it's kind of oppressive when you're actually inside the sport trying to enjoy it.
3 out of 10. That's bold. Have you written a 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review on this lovely podcast? Why the hell not? Go right now and go to your podcast platform of choice and write us a 5-star rating and a 2 or 3 sentence review. Pretty please with sugar on top. And of course, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com to say hello or to advertise with us. And of course, guttingthesacredcow.com to get some sweet ass merch. Get a Gutting the Sacred Cow tank top. Tis the season.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Notes. I'm having a difficult time believing a guy from the city, a city guy in his late 30s is going to take up farming without doing a stint in rehab first.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why is he there?
Amy Madigan, irks me. I don't know why. Maybe it's that her thicker than deep dish Chicago pizza accent. Not a fan of hers. She also annoys me in Uncle Buck, another great film. So a bunch of neighbors tailgate to watch Ray mow his crops down. Really not that much going on in Iowa, is there, folks? Unless you count taking photos of garbage people at Walmart. What wife is going to co-sign on cutting down a ton of crops unless she has a lucrative OnlyFans account?
And please note that they don't do anything with the field. They make it, they chalk it, they get it all prepped, and then they look at it.
Right. For a season or two or three, because yeah. Winter goes by. The music by James Horner is very powerful and perfectly utilized. Yeah. Not this film you want to, but that music is fantastic. Can you imagine if the ghost of Ty Cobb did come back? He'd be canceled and suspended after his first at bat.
Is it the beating the cripple up in the stands?
No, I think it'd be more using the N-word profusely.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you walk into the cornfields of Iowa now, do you trip over a tweaker in a tattered Willie Nelson shirt with a chain wallet and get her done tattooed on his shoulder? I didn't want to do the basic redneck stereotypes. I decided to dig a little bit deeper. Because we punch above in this podcast, yeah. Sometimes down. I can only imagine the nonsense you do hear in these hillbilly city PTA meetings. Funny, though, how we're back to those times, banning books and thoughts and all, huh? Some people have financial discussions like, should I go with the cloth or the leather interior in a new car? Or should I winter in St. Bart's or the Caymans? But the Kinsellas decide if they should drive cross-country with a hermit rider to take them to a ball game. Okay. For a smart man, I think you can lead Terrence Mann anywhere you want to by jingling car keys like a dog to get him to go anywhere. especially when saying you have a fake gun in your pocket. After that whole discussion about him deciding to drive to Boston, Andy decides to bury the goddamn lead and announce, I had the same dream too. Bitch, we could have settled 15 minutes ago that this was an appropriate course of action to take instead of all this back and forth of you're bullshitting crazy.
But that's women, not good movies. There's no drama in that, dude. I know.
But let's sorry, also, I'm efficient.
If he came up there was like, I want to do this. She's like, I had a dream you did it. And then they left. You'd be like, what a lame movie.
All they had to do is he starts telling about that. And she finishes a sentence and look each other's eyes and go, go.
He was kind of a dick at the after the PTA meeting. Like, let the gal have a victory lap. Call right. Someone a Nazi cow.
Right. She did so good in that PTA meeting.
Did you see the name of the restaurant behind the guy telling Kinsella that his friend would have given him the address? Did you guys catch that? The name of the store? Jaime's. Jaime's, a Jewish old-time slur. And it was a Jewish meat store. You would not see a fried chicken joint with the N-word in the title of the store, would you? How do you slide that one by? Nice try. I caught you.
They weren't even in Jaime Town. That's no. Crazy.
How does a gas station attendant know where Terrence Mann lives? You don't leave an address when filling up your tank with regular or getting smokes, last I checked.
He's the only black guy who lives in Boston.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Besides, at the time, Mo Vaughn was, I guess, yeah. Or Oil Can Boyd. Oh, I'll go all day with these references. Couldn't Ray Kinsella looked up Terrence Mann the goddamn phone book or called 411? You see, kids, a phone book was a big book with people's businesses, addresses, and home addresses, as well as phone numbers in them. You got them once a year for free.
Sometimes people were unlisted now. Come on.
Kevin Costner and keeping score at a ball game reminded me when I used to keep score as a kid at a ball game. As an adult, what a colossal waste of time this is. The only adults who do that now are ones who wear headphones to the game to listen to the radio broadcast and also probably have a mild form of autism.
Looking at you, Steve Bartman.
My brain created an image of him as he was saying that. And also, he's keeping score of the game and then like...
What, doodling.
Halfway through the game, third of the way through the game, he's like, oh, forget it, let's go.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, are you in it or are you not in? Like, choose a lane.
I did appreciate their attention to detail. If you looked, and I paused it, if you look at the lineup for Boston, it was all Wade Boggs, Mike Greenwell, and a few other names who were on the team in 88 when they filmed that, I assume. Which, I had, yeah, of course it was. Came out in 89. Doc Graham's whole soliloquy about getting his wish is one of the best metaphors for baseball of all time. I thoroughly enjoyed that whole moment.
Yeah.
What the hell did Ray Kinsella and Terrence Mann talk about for 20 to 30 hours while driving in that car? Call me an efficient fucker, which I am. I would get all the pertinent information I need by that last exit of the Pennsylvania Turnpike and would stop talking as soon as I finished that last piece of fried chicken from Roy Rogers' rest stop.
I mean, you remember during the montage of building and plowing the fields to create the baseball diamond, he's boring the hell out of the females in his family about the history of Shoeless Joe Jackson and the various players on the teens White Sox. Right. And this is in 1989. So if you assume that he's just a crazy person rattling off a baseball esoterica, I think that's where the sweet spot was.
I think Karen seemed to very enjoy that very much.
Fake enthusiasm or real enthusiasm, you decide.
She's not old enough to be cynical. She's all in. That's true.
I mean, those guys, we can always tell our wives. Well, actually, my wife is in the sports, you know, pretty well. But listen, honey, you don't realize it was 4th and 10, and then Eli rolls out of the sack, turns around. He could have looked left. There's Plaxico Burress wide open. But no, he throws it in the middle of the field. David Tyree makes a helmet catch. And that, by the way, it's not a score that everyone goes, oh, that was the game. No, he had to get 2 more 4th downs, and then they score the touchdown. See, women, like, they tune out by that part. But, you know, guys, we could recite that like it was yesterday. I love Ray Liotta laughing while telling the Ty Cobb story. That's that Henry Hill laugh I can listen to any goddamn time. Karen, yeah. You just flushed $40,000 of cocaine down the toilet.
His laugh is almost a non sequitur. Like he says something and then you don't think he's going to laugh. And then that laugh comes. It's almost like, where'd that come from, dude?
Yeah, like any complaint that he's absolutely miscast, which he is, as Joe Jackson, like it melts away in the face of, I'm watching Ray Liotta. Like, right. It is prime.
He's actually good. He's actually athletic. Like, he played sports in high school and stuff. To me, it would be a bigger sin if they casted someone who looked just like him and he sucked at sports.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like Michael Cera, if they were to reboot it now.
Right. And that, yeah.
Or McLovin. God damn it. Do I hate people doing the wave over the age of 15. You don't need props. You don't need to do the wave at a ball game. And while we're at it, stop making jerseys with your name on the back of them. You're a child. You don't play for that team. Stop it.
Dude, I suck. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I would add bringing your glove to a game as an adult. Mm-hmm.
Unless
catch it with a beer cup, dude.
Unless you're sitting in a high line drive foul territory where there is no netting, then I will co-sign on that. Otherwise, the James Earl Jones one constant in life is baseball monologue. I always smile when I hear that. I always do.
I
thoroughly enjoy it. Why does one adult wrestle another while holding a kid atop of the bleachers and then oopsie daisy dropper? Like, how does that happen? Wouldn't you decide to like step down and then maybe have a little tussle over the kid if you still don't have your wits about you? But that always made me question that.
And they get over it real super quick. So right. Moonlight Graham comes over to fix her. She's turning blue. She's just fallen 20 feet or 15 feet on, and she's probably bonked her head. And he discovers that she's choking on a hot dog, none of which makes sense at all. And then like, oh, now suddenly the brother can see the players. And it's like, oh, stop what you're doing with the loan. And I believe everything and let's change and fix it. And everyone's good with each other. It's like, my brother-in-law just knocked over my 7-year-old to her possible death. It's going to take me a bit more of a moment while trying to foreclose my farm. I think.
Andy was a dick the whole time. So it's that was one of the parts that I was like, and then also she's like, I'm going to go call. She said something weird. She goes, I'm going to go call the emergency or something. She didn't say 911. She said something weird. And I was like, maybe that's just a thing that was in 1989. I didn't realize. Yeah. But she's going away. And then Kevin Costner's really like, no,
we got it.
Go.
We got it. Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you just be like, all right, you go do that. And hopefully this guy can fix her. But if he can't, like, she's at least calling somebody. You know what I mean?
It's okay. Magic dude from Korn is going to cross the field and become an old doctor and find the hot dog in her throat, which, yeah, makes a lot of sense.
That makes sense to me. She had a bite of it. She got thrown off. She hit her back. It went down her throat. No.
Here's where this doesn't make sense. Last time I checked, which was 35 minutes ago, when people are choking, they are flailing their arms wildly and they don't pass out in 0.74 seconds. They're gasping for air, making a whole scene or showing the international signs for choking, i.e. wearing a Philadelphia Eagles jersey. You know, the usual stuff. Train's never late. I always well up when he wants to have a catch with his dad. And if you don't, it's because your dad beat you with a white hot wire hanger and then molested your sister on Christmas morning.
I would shout out to Costner's throwing form, though. He's a, a great. Good
– He's a legit ball player. Great. He's yeah. a legit ball player. Yeah. How pissed off would those people be who are lining up to go to the field the last shot you see, and then they would get there and go, oh, sorry, folks, park closed. Moosaw Front should have told you so. Where all the baseball players went back in the cornfield.
It's true. And it's unclear whether they're going to see him, them, right? Like
right.
whole bunches of people don't see the dead right. guys on the field.
That's like so. Going. That's like going to Great Adventure and finding out Kingdom Ka and Nitro are closed while just pulling up. And by the way, how the fuck did all those folks know that the ball players for came out from the corn were there? No one was like, "I'm gonna go tell the town." The brother-in-law left. Do you think he went on just you know sent out a telegram in that horrible hillbilly town? No, they don't. What did he do? Have a town crier read it? Did he go to the back to the old PTA meeting and tell everybody, including that Nazi cow, "Hey." Guess what? Shoeless Joe and his chums are having an old throw-around session. I saw this film on VHS when it first came out. I liked it a lot, and I value it even more as an adult, especially the dad narrative. I got a kick out of it. I know it. Listen, all your points are salient. I get them. I acknowledge them. I agree with a lot of them. This is an adult fairy tale, but this is the best adult fairy tale for sports, period, bar none. This is not a true baseball movie like Major League or Bull Durham. I think Bull Durham's overrated. I can't stand Ron Shelton, but Major League, I'll say. Yes, this is very sugar-fied. I completely acquiesce to all those points. It still hits the keynotes for me. I still love it. Easily passes the remote test for me, Matt Welch. Matt, the remote test, of course, if you're ever flipping around on cable, wherever you catch it, at any junction of the film, you drop the remote and go, yep, I know what I'm doing for the next half hour, whatever. I absolutely still love this film. Funny for you to come down and cast aspersions. Your baseball team, sir, your baseball team invented, actually brought into America, Thunder Six and the Rally Monkeys. So you have no business shitting on an American classic like that when your team brings two shitty props to ball game watching. This film is fantastic. I will drop my score half a point to a 7.5 out of 10 because you have made some fantastic arguments. 7.5 out of 10. Fuck the Rally Sticks and sorry, the Thunder Six and fuck the Rally Monkey. Nick Whitmer, the floor is yours.
Oh, right. So, Matt, the greatest point you made was the one about the Negro Leagues and if there's anybody who deserves the second chance of that, you know, going to play ball again. It's those guys who literally like were not allowed to have their dreams come true.
Excellent point.
I have no argument against that whatsoever. And there's not really nothing I can say. And, you know, and it's funny that like it never even occurred to me as watching this movie. And I think like not to throw the buzzword around that probably makes everybody nauseated now. But there is some weird white privilege there where like nostalgia is for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But to me, it's very cynical to be like they're just selling nostalgic bullshit for $20 a pop because it's ghosts playing baseball.
Yeah.
What? You wouldn't pay $20 to watch ghosts play baseball? Like maybe to me, 30. Like that's like fucking amazing. If you could go watch Shoeless Joe Jackson play for $20,
people are paying to see a Tupac Shakur hologram. Why the fuck not ghost playing baseball?
There's exactly. been inflation since then, right? Let's be honest. And again, it's unclear whether they're going to see them, right?
Well, so maybe it's the dice. I think the monologue from Terrence Mann is basically that people are going to come. They don't know why they're coming, but they're going to come and they're going to enjoy it. So I think that's kind of alluding to they're going to be able to see it. I know it's not 100% clear, so I understand what you mean by that. And also nostalgia is just a human weird thing that we do. Like I was literally in Chelsea the other day and I used to wait tables at a restaurant in Chelsea and I was in Chelsea and I was getting coffee from this coffee shop I used to get. And I was feeling nostalgic. I was like, I used to come here every morning when I worked at this place. And then I thought about it. I was like, I fucking hated that job. Why am I nostalgic about it? It's just this weird human thing that we do. So I get the, hating on it because I often think that like off all the remakes that we keep seeing over and over again, like the lack of originality in a lot of things is just like people taking advantage of nostalgia. But I think that that's a little bit too cynical for this movie because I think this movie has a lot of heart. And I think like the 1980s are a perfect example of like when the America got fast, like the world started moving so much faster, like the 80s and Wall Street and things like that. And it really like was like, let's time out for a second. Let's like think of a more simpler time now. And I get your point about, you know, that's definitely something that only a white person could probably do, because, you know, the 60s were hard. I also think that, like, I don't know, is it that big of a deal that Kevin Costner is not a convincing farmer? And also, is he supposed to be a convincing farmer? Like, I don't think it's ever clear that he's like, he has a green thumb. I think he's always considered like an outsider who kind of sucks at farming and is kind of the laughing stock of the town before he even plows over his field. And to me, I'm glad that he can throw a baseball. I'd rather have him be a shitty farmer and a great baseball player than the other way around.
It's less a complaint about somehow the movie, but it's like the authentic character is in some ways kind of repulsive. I would have liked him to have any like propulsive reason for being alive.
That's
it. And it was kind of unclear what that was,
but that's the point of it. And in my opinion, because he was literally like, I'm like my dad right now. I've never taken a chance. Like, he graduated from college. His wife was from Iowa, so they moved to her hometown. And I think, if I remember correctly, the farm was kind of like,
I think it's a family farm.
It's a family farm. So, like, he's just kind of living somebody else's life, and he was like so resentful of his father for doing that. And then, you know, he just when he's hearing voices, that's another good point, is like, he never was like, what's going on?
And also, like, in that position, maybe it's time to have a little bit of putting on your big boy pants at the end. And he doesn't have to, because the magic fairy story came true. Right.
Right.
Didn't have to, like, say, OK, I'm going to, like, stop being an asshole to my dad retroactively, and also respect the choices that he made and respect my responsibilities here. None of that has to happen, because the magical realism happens instead, which is fine. But, like, it doesn't make him any more attractive.
Right. Right. And so, to me, the movie, I would say the argument about the Negro Leagues is will definitely deduct probably a half a point from my score as well. So I would probably say, I think you kind of hit the nail, and you said 8 to 7.5, right?
Yeah, I did.
I think for me, that kind of is it. 'Cause there's a few other things about it that, like, as a movie, like the script and the logic and everything, it's pretty sound, but there were a few things, we talked about it earlier. What was the scene with the wife not just completely not being on board? Like, that's one of the more believable parts. Like, if you were like, hey, honey, I'm gonna quit my job and make a baseball field or whatever, like, there's no way your wife would be like, great. Like, there's no, like, that's,
I'll grab
so
a hammer.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I'll help you. Like, there's no way. And then, like, in the face of their farm getting, you know, about to be taken away, like, it didn't ever feel like that urgency was real, because they didn't really wear it. Like, Kevin Costner never had, like, the desperation of someone who's really about, you know. So there's a few things, but I think Kevin Costner is unbelievable in this movie. I think he's great. I think Terrence Mann,
James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones is excellent in this movie. And I think the baseball is good. I like that Moonlight Graham. Like, my problem with The Natural was, like, everything that happened was just so over the top. Like, everybody hit a home run and baseball things exploded every time someone swung a bat. Like, Moonlight Graham comes up in his one at bat and he doesn't hit a home run. That would be the movie. He does a sacrifice fly and gets a run in. You know what I mean? Like, I liked the baseball in the movie. I really enjoyed the acting. I enjoyed a lot of that stuff. I'm not a baseball historian, though, so the stuff about Mel Ott is funny. I didn't realize that I just figured he was a Black Sox player who got banned. I didn't realize he played like 20 years in the league. So that's all I got. I think overall, I still love the movie, but I will deduct it a half point as well.
Not bad. By the way, one thing I wrote down, I forgot to mention. Do you know the guy who played his dad, the actor? I was there, so I saw my own two peepers. Signs autographs at Cooperstown during Hall of Fame weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So how sad is that? Yeah. Like, you're the guy who's hey,
we're going to talk about bullshit nostalgic money grab.
Yeah. Like, hey, there's Goose Gossage. I got a photo. Hey, there's Dale Strawberry. Got a photo. There's David Justice. Got a photo. I go, there's a guy who had a catch with Kevin Costner. I'm good.
He's literally in the movie at the end of the movie, and then there's a picture of him in the beginning sequence. That's like it.
Right. That's like saying, I want to take a photo with Zed from Pulp Fiction. No need for that. No, thank you. Let's see. Oh, boy. Let's see what the guys who couldn't throw a ball had to say about this film. Critics 5-star reviews. five-star reviews. Five-star reviews by critics. A wonderful, sentimental tribute to father-son relationships everywhere and the lovely game of baseball, a sports classic. Well, this guy certainly, or girl, certainly missed the mark on that one. Father-son relations. It wasn't one. Feel the Dreams resonated so powerfully with people wishing for a return to traditional values, plus confirmation that parallel dimensions, karma, and clairvoyance exist, that the actual movie set field in Iowa became a major tourist attraction. And you can rent out the field for a night.
And I hear the actor who plays his dad is really
available.
Oh. He's really available. He'll be there for $12.
Guys, he takes your bags, he makes your bed, and he feeds you breakfast in the morning. And shags flies when you hit and when you're at the plate. If you like to think of every time at bat as a new hope, if you can kind of taste the poetry along with the hot dogs they serve at the ballpark, if you like to imagine that life is meant to be good and miracles aren't out of the question, go see it. By the way, ballpark hot dogs are nothing short of outlawed mistreatment in the Geneva Convention. And anyone who says otherwise is wrong.
That might be a metaphor for like Matt's point of like having a hot dog at a ballpark is something that we all think is great, but it really actually sucks. Like when we still do it, we're like eating a hot dog. We're like, this is what we're supposed to do, right? It's nostalgic.
I have a buddy who would go to Yankee games with me, and he would go outside to the dirty water dog cart and get three of those. I would say, all right, top of the fourth inning is when you're going to go in there and just blow up the bathroom. And I was right a lot of the time. Field of Dreams isn't a home run. It's more of a suicide squeeze. If it hadn't been perfectly executed, it wouldn't have worked. But as they say in baseball, a run is a run.
Oh, God. See what I'm talking about? Like, it becomes unbearable, right?
What, critics it's and their metaphors?
It's a nice movie, and it's nice, and the Kevin Costner, and the pretty, and the cornfields. Okay. And you know, it posits baseball as religion, which is an interesting little trick, and this is, you know, this is not heaven, it's Iowa, twice. But, like, that's never enough for the people who are activated by it. Like, it has to be these just glops of caramel sugar nostalgia.
A movie for the thorough tear duct cleansing. The only film that makes tears stream down the cheeks of this hardened critic, and it gets me at least twice every time.
That critic isn't hardened. That critic is from Chicago. That's what I'm hearing.
You bring a knife, they bring a knife, you bring a gun. That's a Chicago way. Critics, one-star reviews.
Critics, one-star reviews. Critics, one-star reviews.
All of this would work better if Robinson built up the reality of the store of the town more, made the citizens a more palpable presence, as Frank Capra did in Hollywood's greatest fable fantasy, It's a Wonderful Life. By the way, that movie fucking stinks, and we did that on this very podcast, so give that a listen. I view baseball as much of a business as a sport and can't imagine getting gushy over such mush. Something tells me this reviewer is a stamp collector. What about you, fellas?
I can appreciate it. Look, I love baseball so much that the overlove of baseball is unbearable to me.
Despite a lovely cameo turn by Burt Lancaster, Field of Dreams is the male weepy at its wussiest.
Ooh, wussy. We still use that word back then. Yeah. That's interesting. No, I mean it's a male story. It's about dudes and their dads and they're playing catch, and I get that. And it's great.
I'm sorry, they're having a catch, Matt.
Come on. Ah, lawyered. The movie may steal a base here and there, but there are no homers. Oh,
damn it. You ever notice like this the ads in baseball games, like for the local ads from the bank, like you won't strike out with Citizens Bank. You will hit a grand slam.
Yeah.
They can't stop themselves.
Do you want to make a shoestring catch of 2.9 APR every year? Die. Die and burn in hell. Amazon, 5-star reviews.
Amazon, 5-star reviews.
This is a truly great movie. This was probably the fourth or fifth time I watched this movie, and I think it had a much greater impact this time, as I think I really felt the deep meaning and got the true message of the plot. Without giving it away, let me just say it's 25 years later, right, guys? We can give it away.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it and you're like worried about a spoiler. That's a little on you. And also, there's probably been so many like references to this movie that you already probably know how it ends and everything. So
just to say that it is the best ode to baseball that I know of, and not just to the game, but to the magical link that provides baseball, that baseball provides, between generations, and how it became a major part fabric of our country. I'd give it 6 stars if I could, but you can't.
You can't, bitch.
Stop trying to. You're not in the Matrix. You don't make your own rules. You can't bend bullets or spoons. I don't care about baseball or even about as much its history. What I care about is having the kind of respectful, joyful, trusting, loving, sane, and magical relationship that this family has. I want it for me and for all of us. Signed, Bob Costas.
Sane?
Yeah.
Sane?
Yeah.
Okay.
You ruined it there, guy. You ruined it there. I hadn't watched this in years, but bought it for inspiration as I was asked to speak at the funeral of a former MLB All-Star. The movie for me was even more touching the first time I watched it. As the better reviews will note, this movie is not primarily about baseball, but relationships. But this was not a written to voice his love for Field of Dreams. This was a humble brag to say he gave the keynote address at a ball player's funeral.
Right.
Yeah. But he couldn't say which one it was. He couldn't say, well, you know, I was the guy who put Roberto Clemente to the ground, and guess who had to read the final speech, Great movie, cheaper than Walmart. Signed, Elon Musk. It was an absolutely wonderful movie. Most of it was filmed in Iowa, the state I grew up. I became even more intrigued with it when reading the credits. In the list of ballplayer extras, I saw the name Jim Doty, who I knew in high school. Now, whether it was the same Jim Doty or not, I have no idea. However, I recently purchased another DVD from Amazon to be sent to he and his wife, who still live in Iowa. Here's my question. Who's sitting through the credits of Field of Dreams? Did they do a Marvel post-credit scene where Timothy Busfield takes a line drive to the nuts from Tris Spreaker or something like that? I knew that would get you too.
Oh, man, that's funny. Good.
Amazon one-star reviews. Stupid premise and actors not believable, except for the little girl. Signed, Andy Warhol. That's why I knew I threw it in here. Okay.
Yeah.
Next one. Ready? Again, this is a 1-star review. Never saw.
That's how you do it.
Wow. Right there. Just brave. Yeah.
He's gonna mic drop and talk shit on something he's never seen. Kind of like everybody did with COVID on Facebook. Sad to think this is someone's idea of what heaven would be. Well, I think it's better than a heaven filled with 80 virgins, as some religions would have. Correct, guys?
Yeah.
That would suck to die and wake up in Iowa, though. Even if there was a baseball field, you'd be like, this is it, dude?
Iowa. You know who said that? Tom Arnold. And he got the fuck out of there. And so did Ashton Kutcher. They both got the fuck out of there. And bang, Demi Moore. This movie was supposed to be my brand new moment with my This movie was supposed to be brand new. Two giant scratches made the movie unusable and hence ruined my Mother's Day plans with Mom.
So that's actually like a product review of a DVD, not of the movie.
Right. Guys,
I was going to review his Mother's Day plans.
Yeah.
And
that's not getting 5 stars.
Mom, I was supposed to just sit here and watch Field of Dreams with you, but the dumb DVD broke. That's not, dude, you fucked up, man. That was a bad plan.
Guys,
this movie about a mom who dies when she's 3 and is not in the picture at all.
Okay. No need for flowers and brunch at Denny's. We're going to do mother-son time with Kevin Costner. I never ordered this digital item, nor did I view it. I ordered the DVD Field of Dreams, or thought that I did. Please give me a credit for $15.89 for this item. Thank you, Gail Warbutton. Is that is that Patrick Warbutton's sister from Family Guy? If so, that royalty check will cover that for you, Gail.
just love old people on the internet. You can tell Gail. Wasn't there a Phyllis earlier? Like, these are definitely women in their 60s, just so confused by what just happened.
I forgot what episode it was, but someone mistakenly left their full name, address, and phone number asking for a refund. So we told all of our fans to go, listen, call her an email. It was email. That was it. Email her saying, Hal, you're Jeff Bezos, and look for that $5.99 refund on your next credit card statement.
See, so that's not nice. That's not nice.
We like to teach dumb people a lesson one at a time. This film is dialogue heavy with everyone, quote unquote, thinking out loud, long, slow plotting pace for the storyline and flat acting.
Where's the lie?
It's not a novel. Of course they think out loud. Every movie is like, what do you want them? Like, what?
It's like a Charlie Brown cartoon. The bubble comes above their head.
Yeah. Like, you want to see Kevin Costner brooding silently? Yeah. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I just love that the future Gabby Hoffman, Andy Warhol child just births the entire business plan in like a 15-second thing right before almost being killed.
Right.
And she's like, just. I'm stuck in Iowa.
Never thought of that one.
Yeah. I'm stuck in Iowa. I can't put my Mensa thoughts to good use because I'm in the middle of a goddamn baseball cornfield until I turn at least 16 and get emancipated. Next one. My son had to watch it for a film class. Too bad it wasn't a good example of expert storytelling. Hey, listen, I went to film classes, many of them. You know what I had to watch? 2001 A Space Odyssey. What an egregious, colossal piece of shit that was. I would have much preferred to watch Field of Dreams than that or the likes of. Sorry, guys. At least there wasn't a sequel. That's the last one.
I mean, maybe that's one reason why people love it even more, because it's the last movie to not have a sequel.
Hey, The Scout with Brendan Fraser didn't have a sequel.
It's true.
Or Mr. 3000 with Bernie Mac. Oh, let's go real fast before we conclude. Give us your all-time favorite baseball top three movies. Go.
Number one, by far, Bad News Bears, and there kind of isn't even a number two and a number three. I love Bad News Bears so much. It might be my favorite movie of all time. It's certainly top five. I treat it – I'm of that age. I was born in 1968, so I treat Bad News Bears, which came out in 76, as a documentary, essentially. I like Moneyball, surprisingly a lot. As an ageless, but Kevin, I like looking at Brad Pitt. I'm not going to lie about that. Just like
Kevin had a great point against Moneyball. I think he made it on the Natural podcast, or maybe that was when we were hanging out.
I did. Here's why Moneyball sucks, and you're a baseball guy. You should know this. Moneyball, the real story, wasn't about guys who took walks. It was about four starting pitchers who each won 20 games, which is plus never Miguel mentioned. That too. The four aces, they're called the four aces. Four aces, they don't mention one time. That is why the A's won, was it 19 in a row or 20 in a row? Sorry. And then they went on to lose to the Yankees in 2001 World Playoffs. Thank you very much. But that is horseshit. Look, it's enjoyable throughout, yes, but that glaring fact ruins it for me. So I can't. I will not have Moneyball in mind. So you say Bad News Bears.
I enjoy watching it because it's based on the 2002 season, and that's when a team in their division won the World Series, and didn't get a movie made about them, but they won the World Series. So
I'm sick. I thought it was 2001
that season. I
like to
be reminded about that because it's the only thing that gives me pleasure. Do I have to rule of three here? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe The Rookie. I really hate most baseball movies. I like Bull Durham. I like it. I like it as a baseball movie.
I didn't dig that one. I will start up Major League, far and away, numero uno.
Never seen that. So like,
what?
I know. It's a thing that happened.
So quotable. So great. Number two. I mean, Eight Man Out's got to be in there as well.
Oh, right. I would elevate that over.
I've never seen that. Is that about the White Sox?
I
figured it was by the name.
It's a John Sayles kind of left wing, like class.
When did that
war
movie
take?
Come out?
88.
80-ish. 88. It's super good. John Cusack in his youth. It's nice.
Great.
And The Babe. Just kidding. That's terrible. I would say number three, I'm a toss up. I like Bad News Bears. Is your favorite part Tanner, the shortstop, going on his racist diatribe? Is that why you like it so much?
Absolutely. Yes. He's the moral center of the film.
I got to say, you know what? I'll put my nuts in the line. Either The Rookie or the other one I just said before, that the 12-year-old who owns the Twins. I'm blanking on it.
Eight Man Out?
Little
Big League?
Little Big League. Yeah, that's number three. I love it.
And I think Bull Durham, I think 61 is an excellent.
Oh, that's a good one, too. That's very good.
And I love Bad News Bears.
Go to Tokyo. Go to Japan.
I love the first Major League is though such a classic. And yes. I always defend For Love of the Game because I hate when people go,
I like
it's
it
a
too.
Baseball movie. It's a love story. Dude, every complex movie that's good isn't just a – like Goodfellas isn't just a gangster movie. There's like other themes in it too. And I think the baseball in For Love of the Game is excellent. I think Kevin Costner was throwing like 400 pitches a day, hitting fucking – 85 on the fucking radar gun, and he's in his 40s. He's a great athlete, baseball player, and those are some for me.
I saw that was they filmed some important footage of that at an Angels preseason, the Freeway Series preseason game in Anaheim Stadium, and like they had him play an inning at shortstop for the Tigers. And like he made a throw in the hole, got a guy out, like he still had chops. Very impressive. There's a documentary that I can highly recommend whose name I'm forgetting right now, but you mentioned Kurt Russell earlier.
The Bastards of Baseball. Love it.
Thank you. It's really, really great.
On Netflix.
It's about, and it's like just an hour plus long. It's about Portland, Oregon AAA team run by Kurt Russell's father that Kurt Russell played for a little bit too, where he just decided to make an independent minor league team and in Portland in just 70s, and it's just fantastic. It's short-lived but really great. It's very Bad News Bears, like comes to life in many ways, but very enjoyable. I'm glad that I finally watched it.
I can listen to Kurt Russell read the phone book. Nick Whitmer, did Matt Welch gut the sacred cow?
I think he had a very, very good job, very good argument. And he got me to drop it a half a point, which coming into this, I did not think was going to happen, because usually when people shit on this movie, they just call it corny, which I think is like lazy. And like, it's not trying to be like some gritty, and it's like, it's playing on all those like emotional heartstrings of like a movie with heart. And it's going to come across as corny if you're not invested into it. So I always don't like the argument of, oh, it's just a corny movie. So the arguments that Matt gave were great and different from what I've heard. So I got to say he did a great job, and he got me to drop it a half a point.
So that's a yes. So I'll co-sign that.
I mean,
I'll co-sign in that gutting. Anytime you get this to drop a point, I'm sure Bill Schultz is going to have another coronary after we viciously shit on The Natural, rightfully so. But yeah, we love Bill Schultz, as you know. That's how we got Matt on the podcast. Actually, Matt and I met for a hot minute at the Yankees Angels rain out about a month or so ago.
That
so
is correct.
Here we are. Matt, shout out where we can find you, what you're up to, all that good stuff. Would you please?
Go to at Matt Welch. It's the on Twitter. It's the easiest way to find me. MATTWELCH. Work for Reason. Do the fifth column. Do stuff for Paloma Media. But root stuff there. That's good. Thanks.
It's a brief plug. I love it. Nick Whitmer, how about yourself?
I'll do the same, except Instagram at Nick_Whitmer. My special is coming out soon. Ooh. I'm in a really hilarious play called Race the Movie, the play. It's like a slapstick spoof, like a Mel Brooks type play about making fun of all the prestigious race movies, like Green Book, and just the embarrassing way Hollywood handles race. We did 3 shows at the New York Theater Festival. We sold all of them out. We have a Comedy Cellar reading. It'll probably come out after this airs, but that's almost sold out. Really, really, really proud of being a part of this project. So if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see more about it. We're trying to do another run of theater shows, but also possibly maybe make it into a movie if we get enough support. So check that out if you want to go to racethemoviethplay.com. So yeah, that's it.
Awesome. I thought you said a brief plug.
Well, I forgot. I had to plug the other stuff. So.
No, I'm kidding. No, of course, as much time as you want. I'm just kidding. KevinGoatee.com for dates and other shenanigans, debauchery, and tomfoolery. GuttingTheSacredCow.com. Tell a friend about this fine podcast. We're kicking ass, taking names. No one else is doing what we're doing. Share the good news with a friend at GTSC Podcast on Twitter. Gutting the Sacred Cow and all the socials, including TikTok. No, we don't floss on there. That's just silly.
Aw, damn.
Matt Welch, thanks for coming on and hanging out. We appreciate your thoughts and Field of Dreams. You did a hell of a job. Nick Whitmer, thank you for stepping in the co-host chair. I knew you'd appreciate the baseball film. You did so admirably well with the Natural episode. Kevin Goatee. Thank you. Kevin Goatee, say everybody, take care. Avita Zen.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.